All right, so welcome to my classroom. So it's Wednesday morning on a normal week, and it's time for our weekly dictionary game. So please get ready to create a definition for a word that I'm going to write on the board. And this is literally what I do in my classroom. So this game works just like the old-fashioned dictionary game of long ago. So I actually write the real definition on a slip of paper, and you all make up definitions for the word. And the goal is to create a credible definition for a word that will cause your classmates to vote for you. So, and I tell them if they already know the meaning of the word, they can create a variation of it. But so what we do is we actually keep score for an entire quarter and see who has the most points at the end of the quarter. It's because you get a point if you vote for the right word, and you get a point for every person that votes for you. So this is too large for everybody to have a paper and hand it in. So I would love for you each to create a definition. Let me go ahead and write the word on the board. Akathisia, a noun. Akathisia. Who would, maybe could I have six volunteers to hand in their definition to me? And then, okay?
Just fun. Can you create a definition that sounds like a dictionary word? Who else? There's one out there. Was that five? I was losing track. One. Anybody else? Okay. I think that will do. But yeah, take a moment. And actually, I think we will actually.
I'll write down the definition on my paper. I think we'll actually pick this up a little bit later, so you have some time to think about it. So what I usually do is I write the word on the board right after devotions, pass out the papers, but then it's like right after first recess. Then I collect them, and we just take a bit of time to do that. So, all right, so I felt very much like a student today. I forgot my name tag, and I was late for the staff meeting. So, but I'm Diana Overholt, and it is a pleasure to have you all here. I have really been enjoying these meetings. And this coming year will be my ninth consecutive year in teaching at Gospel Light School in Lincoln, Missouri. So I taught a year before I was married as well. So I guess you're all going to be my students for the next 45 minutes. So I realize that I'm looking at a room full of mature adults. But just slip your student shoes back on and try to think a little bit like a student. So when you, when it's time for language arts class or English class, as a student, do you have some thoughts about that? What was the first thing that went through your mind when you heard English class? Were you like, yay, my favorite class?
No.
I know. You know, students' likes and dislikes for language arts can really vary. So we would all love to have students with a passion for language and a knack for understanding its complexities. But to be real, most students in the grade 7 to 10 range, they like to get their day's English assignment over with as quickly as possible. And some questions, you know, why care about English? How important is it to pronounce words correctly? Is it necessary to learn the rules that govern our mother tongue? Is it true that some people can't spell? Why worry about proper punctuation when a computer or an iPhone or whatever can correct it for us today? So if you teach long enough, it's inevitable you'll hear forms of these questions. But don't let it get under your skin. So my favorite reply to the why do we have to do this, regardless of the subjects, I just usually say, ignorance is not a virtue. You know, there's no virtue in being ignorant there. But we know the answer is actually a lot more layered than that. So it's good for a student to be disciplined and to master the skills that are taught in English. It's okay for them to know how to diagram complex sentences, even though they may never do it as an adult. We subconsciously utilize those language skills that we learned in school, and it does greatly affect our ability to navigate in the adult world. So if a man knows language well, he can find out about all else, said William Feather. So the material of our focus today is specifically for average students in grades 7 to 10. Students in those grades have had years of previous teaching, and it all pays off. If they're average students, you know, usually grammar is making good sense, and they need little nudging to understand new material. And this is especially true if students have had the same curriculum all through the years. So there's always exceptions to this, of course. There might be a new student who has switched schools and curriculum in eighth grade, or a student who struggled with reading all through school. So, and if you have students like this in your classroom who are not functioning in their normal grade level of language arts, I think it would be great to have some discussion on this, but we'll probably have to just save it to see if we have time at the end of class. Or if you want to discuss it later, I would be happy to. So yeah, so I assume we all know this, but it let's just emphasize that it's imperative that a student be placed in the level of curriculum that he is capable of. So the four components of language arts are quite intertwined, but we'll try to pull out specifics of each: vocabulary, spelling, grammar, and writing. So class, we commence with number one, vocabulary, words defined and articulated. If you don't know how to pronounce a word, say it loud, said William Strunk Jr. So I would like to have several volunteers to read the list of words in our pronunciation check. This is not meant to be anything to make you nervous. How do you say the words? You know, depending on what area you're from, we may say it differently. So could I have someone that would read those words aloud?
All?
Yes, the whole list.
Adjective, burial, decimal, plagiarize, vade, cafe, or cafe, finale, and then quagmire.
All right, another person? Go ahead.
Adjective, burial, decimal, plagiarize, vade, cafe, finale, quagmire.
All right. One more. Go ahead.
Adjective, burial, decimal, plagiarize, vade, cafe, finale, quagmire.
All right, thank you all. So proper pronunciation is easier to access now than it's ever been. I grew up with hard copy dictionaries. So if you wanted to know how to pronounce a word, your only option was to flip through the dictionary to find out. So I used my 16th birthday money to buy myself a red Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, which I still have today. But I really don't use it very often, sadly. I love its ragged pages, but it's just so much easier to carry a Merriam-Webster dictionary app on your phone. But let me say that all the students in my classroom are expected to use an actual dictionary, and use an actual dictionary. But I've been suspicious that the saturation of technology is making variations in pronunciation much more acceptable than ever. So this became blatantly clear to me as I studied for this session. So I was thinking about the word adjective, and how that this is one word I would love to make sure that teachers are pronouncing correctly. Adjective, not adjective. When I hear adjective, it makes me agitated. But my old red Webster's dictionary only gave one pronunciation of the word, adjective. But I had this sudden horrible thought. What if adjective is now a correct pronunciation? So I had to find out. So I trepidatiously looked it up on my phone, and adjective is listed as the second pronunciation. Seriously. So I was like, when did that happen? So I know that regional pronunciations or colloquialisms become widespread and acceptable over time, but I don't like the idea that if enough people mispronounce a word, it becomes acceptable. But what can one do? You know, language is fluid. Definitions change with time, and so do pronunciations. I liked these quotes here. The thing about language is that it can't stay still. Restless and impatient, it races forward without waiting for our dictionaries to catch up. The changes made are meant to make it easier for us to understand each other. That's the entire point of having language in the first place. Beth Lincoln. Language is more fashion than science, and matters of usage, spelling, and pronunciation tend to wander around like hemlines. Bill Bryson. Oh. So let's be aware that many words can be pronounced more than one way. I looked up a variety of them, and we also, this came out in my classroom last year. A lot of these words in the pronunciation check were ones we looked up. Even like the simple word sure, S-U-R-E. My dictionary says sure is also acceptable, sure or sure. So these, all these words in the pronunciation check can be pronounced at least two ways. Adjective or adjective. Bad was an interesting word. I would have learned bad. Bade, or it also listed bod as being one. I figure the only time I would use that is singing in Handel's Messiah or something like that. He bade him arise. So then burial or burial. Cafe or cafe. Decimal or decimal. Finale or finale. Plagiarize or plagiarize. And quagmire or quagmire. Those are all listed as acceptable. So that was interesting to me.
I have a question.
Yes.
On the word bad, which one is the number one pronunciation on that one?
I believe it was bad.
Bad.
I know it's
bad
hard.
Bad is immortal to have an sound or lift your bad voices?
Yeah. Exactly. I was going to check into this some more, and I did not, but it's just, dictionaries can really vary as well. So this was using my Merriam-Webster app, which I figure is probably the most popular, but I could be wrong. I should maybe look for a Cambridge app or something.
I have a little input on that one. So years ago, of course, I hated English in school, basically, but Gary Sharp found a dictionary that gives a couple of different pronunciations for obvious words we had. One of them was travail for travail,
uh-huh,
and chastisement for chastisement.
Uh-huh.
So I've kind of lived with that word in these years. And this just shows some of the differences that happen.
You know, we want to pronounce words correctly, but yeah. I guess we just have to be aware that our language is fluid, and there's going to be more than one ways. And we could even spend a little bit of time reflecting how words change in meaning. I don't know if you all have words that come to your mind that changed in meaning over the years. You know, there is. It's unfortunate, but you know, innocent words and names can take on deviant meanings over time. And just one example is the word fondle. In my childhood, you know, that would be meant a loving touch or caress. But I only see it nowadays mostly in connotation with like molesting or something like that. So I don't use that word. So I just feel like that's, and then of course there's many culturally sensitive words nowadays. Like instead of saying Eskimo, we're supposed to say Inuit. And of course Indian was coined by Christopher Columbus, but now it's better to say Native American or Indigenous. But there's all that to consider. But moving on. B, view misuse positively. What do you think? Is that true? You know, I suggest that students who tend to mispronounce big words are the readers. You know, there are ones that read a lot and know words, but maybe not necessarily how to pronounce them. So the fact that they even know the word is a sign of literacy, and it should be greatly encouraged. So, and be aware that students may mispronounce a word because of hearing adults in their lives say it that way. Some years ago, I was quite surprised to hear a book of the Bible pronounced Thessalonians. The student said his dad and his minister both said it the same way. So I did double and triple check that pronunciation to make sure they knew what I was talking about. So I do not have a Pennsylvania Dutch background, but I thought maybe that plays into it depending on what language they speak. But so what is our context here for correction? Is it a good thing for students to be quick to correct each other's pronunciation and the teacher's pronunciation? I
think it was done in a good spirit. It could be kind of a game.
Yeah.
Well, not to make people feel bad.
It seems like school should be a good place to be able to do that. I mean, because that's what we're there for, to teach and to learn correctly together. But
another question over here.
Yes. Yeah, well, it happens. Actually, that was many of the words we looked up last year was because the students trying to correct me, but I held my own. But you know, but that's how, you know, at this age, they are quick to do that. And I say it's fine. It's as far as the context or like when does it turn critical? You know, I think, like I said, I think this age group is pretty good-natured, and it seems to me if students are feeling hurt or criticized, then there might be a deeper relational problem going on that needs to be watched. But obviously, we as teachers want to set the example on how we deliver corrections. Mm-hmm. And I had to think of when I was studying for this and wrote that down, all of a sudden I thought of an incident last year. So my quiet, studious ninth grader delivered a well-researched oral report on orchestral music. And the report came from her desire to learn more about these types of musical instruments, as she was unfamiliar with many of them. So as she gave her report, I did not have the heart to correct her pronunciation of C-E-L-L-O. She said cello instead of cello. She would have been so embarrassed. And I intended to actually later quietly say something to her, but I forgot about it. So, you know, just our, yeah, we can kind of sense when what's appropriate and what isn't. And I will say as we go, I really appreciate if you just speak up if you have something you want to add. I learned with my last, the class yesterday, I had too much material. And so but I want to hear what you all have to say. So I don't want to forget about the definitions of our words, though, so we'll try to keep that in mind. So moving right on into spelling, right on the heels of vocabulary, the sequence of letters that form words. When our spelling is perfect, it's invisible. When it's flawed, it prompts strong negative association. Marilyn Vos Savant. Anyone who can only think of one way to spell a word obviously lacks imagination. Mark Twain. The student's perspective. I thought this could be maybe a little bit fun to play around with sometime, have the students write their, say a word and have them write how they think it's spelled, and then, you know, that could create a conversation about having one standard for the spelling. But let's see. Let me just get one. I guess I didn't ask what curriculum you all use. How many of you use the Christian Light education? Maybe, okay. So this is, maybe you'll get some tips though, even though this is especially referring to the CLE. So the first thing I do with new spelling words in their language arts books, they will have, there will be three different spelling tests in the book. And the first thing I do is to have each student read these words individually to me. It took me a bit to figure this out, but I realized students could learn how to spell a word and not actually know how to say it. So they have to read the words to me. I put my initials in the box just to make sure, just so that way I can keep track of who did it. So I just think that's kind of a fast way to get them onto proper pronunciation. And as I looked at this list, CLE has great spelling words, so this is eighth grade. I looked at the list, I could see several that can be pronounced more than one way, but like the generator, generic, generosity, genesis, genius, genre, and you can actually, in my Merriam-Webster app, it says that genre is also acceptable. Genuine or genuine, both are supposed to be acceptable. Germinate, homogenize, just a lot of good words here. And then what CLE does is that every day, you have 4 days where you work with these words and you write the words every day. And I specify my students to have one composition book designated to writing down their words, and make it easy on yourself to score it by having them just do it in order and mark their spot. So that's a great way to study the spelling words. Let's see here. Before we go much further, I'd love to just give out some of, I'm going to give you 10 spelling words pulled from this eighth grade book. So you have this little spot down there, spelling quiz. Number one is trajectory. The eraser's trajectory made the teacher gasp. Trajectory. Number two, protege. Perhaps we are all proteges of our childhood teachers. Protege. Number three, infinitesimal. The note was written on a scrap of paper of infinitesimal size, but it was a note nonetheless. Infinitesimal. Number four, facade. Miss Diana's smiling facade masked the fact that she could barely handle the crunching of potato chips. Facade. Number five, euphemism. The current teen euphemism for brother is bro. Euphemism. Number six, rendezvous, or also rendezvous is acceptable. Is it possible to have a rendezvous with the coffee pot? The tired teacher wondered. Number seven, repatriate or repatriate. Either is correct. Mr. Matthews stressed the importance of repatriating used Kleenex to the trash can after their duty was done. Repatriate. Number eight, I think it's number eight, sustenance. Note to self, is coffee sustenance? Sustenance. Number nine, chagrin. Much to Miss Carrie's chagrin, she received 5 bags of chocolates as presents while on her diet. Chagrin. And the last one for number 10, incessant. The incessant blowing of noses meant that the Kleenex box was rapidly emptying. Incessant. Yes?
Describe a situation. school was always hard for me, and spelling was one of the easiest things for me. So, but the only way I could do it is I would just take a picture of my mind and read it back, or just look at it in my mind and write it down. It worked good for years. Now it's not working so good. The pictures are for, and I don't have it down. So spelling is getting harder and harder as I get older, but it's kind of interesting to me because I often just thought of a page or thought of something and I can just see it on the page and draw it out. And now, so what do you do with something like that?
You know what? I forgot to introduce him, but that's my husband back there, Michael. So I don't know. Yeah, you probably already knew that, but that was... Thanks for bringing that up about the thing of spelling, how you could spell by seeing it in your mind. Because that was actually one of the things that I was going to talk about is good ways for students to study spelling words. And is there one size fits all? Which I think we know there isn't. But so that was, so I have some students that they want to go somewhere by themselves and say the word aloud before we have a spelling test. Now, I don't know about you all, but I feel like when we have a quiz or a test, that's a good time. Let the students go out and study together. You know, their words have been written in the book. It's not like they're, it's not like they've been neglecting their words. So I don't know. Do any of you have suggestions as far as spelling? But yeah, I let them go out to the gym steps or to the hallway, and they have about 10 minutes to quiz each other on their words, and then come back in and do their spelling test. Yes?
Some of mine like to do it on the board. You know, have
just go up to the board and practice.
Give the friend
yeah.
Spelling
there you go.
Switch.
Yeah, if it doesn't get in the way of everybody else working. Yeah, that's a good point.
My dad was a picture taker like that. But then I think exactly the same thing happened to him. Like the picture started blurring. And he just said, you know, this quote by Mark Twain, he quotes it all the time. And he said, you don't have to spell. You do not have to spell. People will understand without good spelling. So, I mean, that's kind of freeing. So. If the picture do be blurred, make them up.
You know. Anymore, it passes that way pretty easy. Yeah, and you know, if you look at the old hieroglyphics, we're going back to that with just text, you can pretty much get a whole message with all of that.
One cave wall.
You know, I will say one thing, I'll just mention here quickly, one thing that your brother Steve has said in his teaching, that one time, one of the students he had just seemed like they could not spell. But he limited the, instead of 20 spelling words, it limited it to 5. Just learn to spell these 5 words well. So I've never forgotten that. There's various things that we can do. And I did want to, while I have this book here in front of me, I did want to mention this as well. So if you are my student, you don't know these words, like, this page actually has 15 problems on it where you are supposed to match the spelling word to its definition. So if I look at that page and I see that you have 4 or more wrong, that means you didn't make a passing grade and you are not looking up the words. You're supposed to be looking up these words and getting to know them. So if I could tell they just guessed and they have less than 80% on this page, then they actually have to go and look up in the dictionary each word and write the page number down beside it. So just a little tip. If you want your students to actually take the time to to look up your words, that might be one way to do it. Of course, you have to follow up then. And yeah, I did catch sometimes the dictionary page might not match what it's supposed to be. But yeah, that's one thing that can help them. Let's see. So as far as playing around with words, let's just touch on that a bit. So there's a little game that I started playing at some point with my students with every spelling test, and they love it. I just call it the bonus word. So, and maybe you guys do this as well. So yeah, that's simply that every time I give a quiz or a spelling test, I will be giving them a bonus word that they, for them to try to spell. So if I'm giving a 7th grade spelling test, I'll find a word from the 8th grade book. If I'm giving an 8th grade spelling test, it will be a high school word. And sometimes I'll just throw in a tricky word like a zucchini or Afghan or something. And if they don't get the bonus word right, there's no repercussions. But if they do get it right, then it will cancel out one of the other words they got wrong. Uh-huh. So, or they get extra points for it. So, some of them actually got a score higher than 100%. Not very many, but last year I had a 7th grade spelling whiz, and I think he got 100% or 102% on every spelling test he ever took. He'd even listen to the 8th grader spelling words, write down that bonus word, and bring it to me to see if he had spelled it right, and it kind of bugged the 8th graders, but I think it helped to spur them on to improved spelling. So, and he actually, this student won the end of year, he's the youngest one in the room, he won our spelling bee that we had at the end of the year. But you know, keep that game in mind throughout the year. If you have a block of time, go ahead and create a spelling bee with your students using the current words they have. Start with the lowest grades words and work your way up and have them race it on the board to see who can spell it right and see who's the last one. So I have done that throughout the years if we had a block of time, which doesn't happen just a lot, but yeah. Let's see. Oh boy. 15 minutes yet? Okay. So let's just move right on to grammar, the rules of English language and structure, quotes from unknown sources. I try to keep an open mind about everything except grammar and pronunciation. Rule number one in arguments, if you're losing, start correcting their grammar. My life is a constant battle between wanting to correct grammar and wanting friends. I was so impressed to find this one quote from someone named Gertrude Stein. I really do not know that anything has ever been more exciting than diagramming sentences. And I was kind of impressed with it until I researched the author's life, and then I was like, okay, yeah, I can understand why she said that. But that was, yeah, kind of amazing. So I do have to marvel at our students' capability of working with language at this point. I mean, So we've been relaxing all summer, myself included. And like I said, I felt like a student when I picked the stuff back up. I had to think for a little bit the definitions of these things. I have this list here. Can you define these terms? The body parts. And this is by no means an exhaustive list. I just went ahead and wrote down some of the things that our students are supposed to know so that they can diagram these sentences. And I don't know how much time we'll have here. But like, so can you, like a noun or pronoun that follows an action verb and receives the action of the verb, looking at your list, what is that defining? Yes. Direct object. The next one, a verbal that begins with to and ends with the basic form of the verb. Yeah, good. So you guys have not been on vacation, but yeah. A clause that cannot stand alone. Yes. A word that completes the predicate. Yes. Great. I don't know if we'll go through the whole thing. You guys are, but that's great. There's really no substitute for knowing it ourselves. But I will say this, if you have kind of been out of it, or you don't, if you've been out of it for several years or whatever, and you actually feel a little bit nervous about remembering all these parts of speech and stuff, it's okay to teach with one hand on the teacher guide. I mean, to just, and I don't know how it works for your other curriculums, but CLE's teacher guide is wonderful for it. They have all the board work suggestions written out that you can do for the day, and they have everything set up to have a really good class. So, but yeah, we can, and enjoy doing some books yourself. A couple years ago when I had English 2, it was just, I just wanted to do them. It was just, stay sharp. So, I also had two sentences there for you to diagram. Let me just show you few things that even if you aren't using CLE, you might find these helpful. So those two sentences to diagram were straight from the Language Arts 8 extra practice sheets. And this is just, they have it divided by types of speech, like right, this whole page is on infinitives and then diagramming them, transitive and intransitive verbs, diagramming infinitive phrases. If you want to find something for your, if you need to give your student extra work in something, you can copy out of this book. They also have this Basics of Diagramming book that's very handy reference, and the students will get this book and look something up if they're trying to remember. So diagramming gets pretty advanced there. So, oh, and this, I'm sure you all have, there's these sheets as well that the students can access, but I guess while I'm out, well, I'll touch on that a little bit later. Maybe we'll come back to the diagramming later and just keep moving on here since time is getting away. Did anybody have anything to add on that of the grammar? So maybe this would be a good time, if those of you that I gave papers to, may I pick them back up? Creative writing. Start writing no matter what. The water does not flow until the faucet is turned on, said Louis Lamar. Took me 15 years to discover I had no talent for writing, but I couldn't give it up because by that time I was too famous. Robert Benchley. He wrote that chip off the old block or whatever. Let's see here. Too many papers. So what if the clock on your classroom wall could speak? Draft a short welcome back to school letter from the clock to your students. I did this one year, just wrote it on the board. Students seemed to enjoy it. So go ahead and do that while I get these definitions ready here. All right, this is not something you had to overthink. Mine was pretty simple. Anybody want to read theirs? Go ahead, Eric.
I know that you love me. You look at me with such longing. I love you too. I wonder when you are gone, if time even means anything, if there is no one to mark its passing. You make my work at me.
Sincerely, the clock. I love that. Yes, thank you. Okay. All right, let's pause our the moment of talking about creative writing to go through these definitions. So we have 6 definitions here. I will be reading them off, giving them numbers, reading them off, and then you will each vote on which one you think, each individually vote on which one you think is the correct definition. All right, so akathisia, number 1, a state in which the mind hallucinates briefly during an overload of stimuli. Number 2, akathisia, a respiratory condition where the bronchi expand rather than contract. Number 3, akathisia, the state of shock often resulting in temporary paralysis. Number 4, akathisia, the tuft of feathers on the nape of the pileated woodpecker. Number 5, akathisia, the inability to sit still, a state of restlessness. Number 6, akathisia, a condition in which the lower vertebrae are fused together and unable to move. Seems like minds were kind of going in some of the same directions, aren't they? Do you need them again, or shall we? At school, I usually read them twice, but I don't. Okay, I'll go through it rapidly. Number 1, a state in which the mind hallucinates briefly during an overload of stimuli. Number 2, a respiratory condition where the bronchi expand rather than contract. Number 3, a state of shock often resulting in temporary paralysis. Number 4, the tuft of feathers on the nape of the pileated woodpecker. Number 5, the inability to sit still, state of restlessness. And number 6, a condition in which the lower vertebrae are fused together and unable to move. Okay, any votes for number 1, state in which the mind hallucinates briefly? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, any for number 2, the respiratory condition where bronchi expand rather than contract? What about number 3, a state of shock resulting in temporary paralysis? Number 4, the tuft of feathers on the nape of the pileated woodpecker? Number 5, the inability to sit still, a state of restlessness? And number 6, a condition in which the lower vertebrae are fused together. Okay. The correct definition only had 1 vote, the inability to sit still, a state of restlessness. I found that word one day. I Googled what word means that you can't sit still, and it was akathisia. So the one that received the most votes was a state in which the mind hallucinates briefly during an overload of stimuli. Who wrote that? All right, he had 7 votes. Okay, so you would get 7 points for that. So, all right, I just think this is a fun way to learn new words, and yeah, the students really seem to enjoy it. Let's see, but back to our creative writing. Teacher provided prodding or motivation. You know what? Is it prodding? Is it motivation? But it's probably both. I found, yeah, I'm going to condense things because we're getting short on time. Because if you have something to add to this on your experience with your students, I'd love to hear it. For myself, it feels like the encouragement, telling students they can do this and write about something that is dear to you or that you know. So this is, they had to write a poem toward the end of last year. So poetry, yeah, it just looked like a huge thing. So I told them, write about something you're interested in. And so one student wrote about a computer game. Another one wrote about World War I, and still another wrote about the recent death of her grandfather. And they were all very good. So, they can't always write about what they know. Like Language Arts 806, they're supposed to write a fable. And so sometimes we just have to give suggestions to get their minds moving. So in that case, I ended up writing several ideas on the board for parables. The fish who wanted to live on land. Or the ant and the sandwich. You know, just something to get their mind moving. And of course, having resources ready for them. In the 7th grade, they're supposed to to write a story that parallels a popular one, such as If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. And so, yeah, I like to have as much on hand as I can, because Some parents are quick to get resources their children need, but you know what? Instead of counting on that, I just reduce the stress to just have everything your class needs. And I think this especially applies to research papers. I don't know about your other curriculum, but with CLE, there's this wonderful time-consuming, student-stretching, once-a-year research paper that all the grades need to write. But we've kind of turned it into a highlight for our room because we make that our yearly visit as a class to the local library. So we all go on a designated afternoon and spend, usually it's only an hour or so, and they each need to check out 3 books on the subject. So it's great practice for them for using a card catalog. And I've actually had some students that they have never went to the library. You know, you never know what, yeah. So, and often being there triggers interest in more than one subject. So we really enjoy that thing of all going to the, making a trip to the library and getting stuff for our research papers. And then I love when they have that research paper to write because all their spare time is occupied with all these, yeah. For student-supplied responsibility, and they're at the age where they can catch the vision for and being self-motivated. But it does feel like they feel more responsible to do their best when they know their work is going to be read aloud or posted on the wall, or both of which I do. But one of the things that I really like is our administrator, Adrian Miller. He will come in and listen to oral reports and then give feedback in his suggested grade. So I love that, and it seems to give added weight to their responsibility. It makes them a little bit nervous, but they actually they want to kind of do their best and get feedback from him. So I would suggest that for your own room, if you have oral reports, you can bring somebody else in, and that will just add to it. So let's see. I had some of the things I jotted down that I didn't know if we'd have time to get into. I was just curious if ChatGPT or AI is affecting your classroom, if you get into any of that right now. We'll just bypass that. So to sum it up, as teachers, let's stay sharp with our English. I'll give you guys an assignment if you want to take with you. I thought of this the other Sunday in church. We were reading Luke 4:18 and 19, and those verses are all one sentence. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. One sentence. And I thought, what would this look like in a diagram? So there you go. Go ahead. Give that a try. But let's stay sharp. Let's continue to be students ourselves, first and foremost. And let's model what it means to enjoy the gift of speech that God has blessed us with, and to use it in ways that honors him. So.